Of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again, and the institutions and the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened, and some have to be changed.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
There's a need for a new world order, but it has different characteristics in different parts of the world.
Never before has a new world order had to be assembled from so many different perceptions or on so global a scale. Nor has any previous order had to combine the attributes of the historic balance of power system with global democratic opinion and the exploding technology of the contemporary period.
After 1989, President Bush said, and it was a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
I think his task will be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period, when really a new world order can be created. It's a great opportunity. It isn't just a crisis.
Today, we are faced, I think, with the approach of what may be called the ultimate revolution, the final revolution, where, well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. This is seems to me the ultimate in malevolent revolution, shall we say? And this is a problem which has interested me for many years, and about which I wrote 30 years ago a fable, The Brave New World, which is essentially the account of a society making use of all the devices at that time available, and some of the devices which I imagined to be possible, making use of them in order to, first of all, to standardize the population, to iron out inconvenient human differences, to create so to say, mass-produced models of human beings arranged in some kind of a scientific caste system.
Problem, reaction, solution. It's a mind manipulation technique that avoids not only opposition to what is the goal of the manipulators, it actually manipulates people to demand they do what they want to do anyway. You start by secretly creating a problem in the world. You then use the media, which isn't difficult, to wind up public opinion in relation to your manufactured problem to the point where public opinion utters the classic words, "Something must be done! This can't go on! What are they gonna do about it?" And at that point, those who created the problem and got someone else to be blamed for it wound up that public reaction, then openly, in the public arena, in the parliaments of the world, in the newspapers and on the television, offer the solutions to the problems they have created.
democracy has collapsed. And whatever name you want to put on Paul's position, isolationist or non-interventionist, he is without a doubt the one Republican who will be running who is the closest to Obama in his view of foreign policy. Arguably, he's to the left of Obama on NSA, on surveillance, on the use of drones, essentially on the war on terror. And when, in the bite you showed, it's just as one example, he says our goal is always peace, not war. Well, that's the dichotomy Obama is always presenting, either peace or war, as if that is the choice. That is not right. Our objective is always national security. And sometimes you can get it on the cheap and sometimes you can't. So I think essentially he has a hill that he cannot climb. The more he tacks to the right and shows that he's tough on foreign policy, or takes a position which is a tough, I think it puts in question his authenticity.
These are people, this is sort of this neocon community, and the neoconservatives have really never met a war they didn't like. And so what you'll see is that these attacks saying, oh, you're close to Obama's position, in reality, the neocons who have been with President Obama on the war in Libya, they've been with President Obama on wanting to bomb Assad, and they were really also for taking out Hussein. Everything that they've been for over the last decade has really been to make America less safe and to make the region more chaotic. So I think we could have a good intellectual debate about this, but attack ads like this that are mostly untrue, if not entirely false, probably don't serve the public very well.
You want to name names when you're criticizing or blasting these so-called neocons?
Well, you know, if these people would release their donors, then we'd know who they are. But these are people who want to be in the shadows and have something secret and then put up a bunch of lies. But I think there are people that you'll see in the Senate who basically favored giving arms to Gaddafi. And then the next year they were favoring giving arms to the so-called freedom fighters. But now it turns out that the war they had in Libya, which supported by the neocons and President Obama, the war's a disaster. Radical jihad has run amok in Libya. It's chaotic. And I think we're more likely to be attacked by people organizing in Libya than we were before the war. So people need to think through when war is in our interest and when war is not in our interest.
If John McCain is a neocon, then what can the word possibly mean? If John McCain, Dick Cheney, George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, the sort of four of them are the ones who led us into war in Iraq, are neocons, then explain to me what exactly a neocon is.
Charles, you know what a neocon is. I mean, this is kind of silly.
You both know what a neocon is, and you both know
neoconservatives.
Can you define
They're people who were mostly used to be liberals who became Republicans over foreign policy. They're more hawkish on foreign policy. You know, Irving Kristol, Bill Kristol's a neocon. You're a neocon. I mean, why are you acting like we don't know there are no neocons? Paul Wolfowitz is a neocon.
Was Dick Cheney a neocon?
I don't think he was a neocon.
Don Rumsfeld a neocon?
He got in there. But the point is, neocons it's mind-boggling to me. Are you trying to suggest that there was not a group of people that were articulating that we needed to attack Iraq that were part of the neoconservative movement?
No, but the definition of neocon is what? It is someone who always wants to go to war?
It's somebody who I think is hawkish on foreign policy.
Can I finish the sentence?
Okay. It's somebody who I think is hawkish on foreign policy and who had a view, and maybe the view has changed, but for quite a period of time had a view that we could spread democracy. I think they were behind this democracy spreading idea that George Bush endorsed, and this idea that we could remake the Middle East through American power. And it's something that even I think Obama has bought into. I think it's something that Hillary has bought into. But I think there is clearly a neoconservative movement. I mean, the people at Commentary Magazine are neoconservatives. I mean, I don't think that that's to say they all want to go to war all the time. I don't think that's right. But there is a neoconservative movement that I do feel like almost every time there is an issue that comes up, the solution is for us to get involved in some military fashion, whether it's arming people, whether it's actually invading, as in Iraq. But, you know,
there are some people who would say, you know, Hillary Clinton and her support for the Iraq war and her positioning on a number of different issues, including Libya and others, mm-hmm. Is more in that vein.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So is she a neocon?
I don't think she identifies as a neocon, and I don't think. But I think people who identify with the view of remaking the Middle East, you know, through American power, I would consider to be. And I don't see this Hillary being that, but she could be a closet neocon. I mean, I don't.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It is totally meaningless. Of the three people you mentioned, look. First of all, if Hillary and Obama buy into the democracy thing and that makes them a neocon, then the word
I didn't say it made them a neocon. You guys are pressing me to say that they're neocons. I named neocons as being Bill Kristol, you, Paul Wolfowitz. And are you going to tell me that those three people have never considered themselves neocons?
The word to me, I don't use it because it is meaningless. What we have in common is all of us are Jews, but not all of us were once liberals. Bill was never a liberal.
But his father was.
What? So you inherit?
No, but his father wasn't his so father. Wasn't his father a bit of a neoconservative?
Doesn't make him.
But why are you trying to pretend
my
like there's
father
nothing?
Was? But I'm saying people are saying the war. People who want to go to war are neocons. The fact is there are hawks in the country. That's the word.
So are there neoconservatives? Exactly. Do they exist?
I'm not sure that it's a coherent.
So there never was a neoconservative movement.
It's lost all meaning the way that it's been used by the media, frankly. Don Rumsfeld, who wanted to go to Iraq, bomb the heck out of it, and get out right away, is a neocon. And you have Paul Wolfowitz, who wanted to go and expand.
I don't really consider Donald Rumsfeld a neocon.
But everybody else does. But everybody else does. That's the common.
Paul Wolfowitz was a neocon. But I just want to get back to this. What you tell me then? What these people that have been considered neocons? What do they believe?
There is no uniting belief. There's a book written, a collection of books called The Neoconservative Tendency. The most that Irving Kristol would agree to was that a tendency, a way to look at government. But the idea that this conspiracy of, as of yet three, Kristol, me, and Paul Wolfowitz, somehow are the ones who, it's always implied, were behind the war. Boss was the Secretary of State. He was the Deputy Secretary of State. Defense. Rumsfeld, Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, George Bush. To speak of any of them as neoconservative is preposterous.
I didn't, though. That's the thing that's really starting to frustrate me, is that I never said those people were neocons.
No, Rand Paul.
You guys keep saying that. I said that.
We're talking about Rand Paul.
I know, but it's like,
you reacted to that.
He's not, he didn't name anybody. He was talking about the people who were attacking him in this ad.
That's the point, that he didn't name anybody, and he never can. That's the problem. It's become such a meaningless word. There's no doubt that what you talk about, you know, Irving Kristol wrote, the neoconservative persuasion. I mean, there's certainly people have identified as neoconservatives, and they're largely along the lines of what you say.
Games like Bill Kristol doesn't think like his dad. I mean, it's just like you're just playing games.
No, but look.
I mean, it's not.
No, you're not playing games, and these terms actually matter, particularly when you're suggesting that they want to go to war all the time, which is what Rand Paul has said.
I'm just saying in this conversation with you guys, trying to pretend that this is some fantasy that there are people called neoconservatives and that they're hawkish and that they wanted to make the Middle East in the.
I just literally conceded that to you like 2 seconds ago that there was.
But he has been mocking the idea that it's three people in existence.
Say what? I'm going to go over here. I'll be in my office.
And implying for extra measure that I'm anti-Semitic. So I really appreciated that.
Down four says it's a word, term. Can we please move on? Last word. Anybody else on this neocon?
The last word is if the criteria are two, as I heard them, used to be a liberal and are hawkish, it doesn't apply to Bill Kristol. Doesn't apply to anybody who was hawkish on the Iraq War, who was actually in power at the time. What we're left with is Paul Wolfowitz and me, and unless Rand Paul wants to claim that we were the ones who created the war, it's preposterous.
And Irving Kristol. The point was that that's how it started. I didn't say that the only people who considered themselves neoconservatives were former liberals.
30 years ago, it had a meeting. It was former liberals who became conservative during the 1970s as a reaction to what happened in the 60s and to the McGovern movement. It had a meaning. It has no meaning now, and it is used as a slur.
Did it have a meaning in the lead-up to the Iraq War?
I don't think so.
I think that it did.
May in fact be influenced by the fact that we've made certain decisions in the past and it hasn't worked out particularly well. There were in fact people in the administration who told us this would be a cakewalk, that we'd be greeted as liberators, who don't seem to understand the region nearly as well as they pretended that they did before the conflict began and after the conflict has gone on. For more than a decade, hundreds of thousands of lives expended at this point, sir.
That is ridiculous. That is utterly ridiculous.
Okay, fine.
What's your source on the hundreds of thousands of lives?
800,000 plus lives.
This is a kind of big lie.
How about that?
No, this is a big lie.
No, actually, it's not a big lie. Let's say it's a mistake.
You don't have a source for it. Then tell me your source.
Actually, sir, again, the source...
Tell me your source.
Okay, no, no. I'm going to stop you both right now. Hold on 1 second. Why don't you give me your source? Why don't you give me your number?
If you're
so accurate with your math, hold on a second. If you're so accurate with your math, why don't you give me a number? And why don't you justify that? So you're telling me a completely destabilized Iraq now is better than where it was in 2002?
I'm not responsible for Iraq today. That's because of what Barack Obama did in withdrawing American troops.
The withdrawal
took
place.
That is fundamentally the case. I think that's unquestionably
the basis of the timetable that the Bush administration set up before they left. The Iraqi regime that we protected, we the United States government, I'm being very inclusive there because I've been against this, that we protected, were supposed to have time to stand up troops, were supposed to have time to reconcile themselves to these various factions. They did not do that. They failed at it miserably, and they asked us to leave. It seems ridiculous to me to try and place all of the blame on this for this, especially from someone who just said we shouldn't be pointing fingers.
If you people would ever ask a sensible question instead of simply relying on ideological nostrums, I would explain to you that I think that nation building in Iraq was never going to work and was not the objective. All that said, it was the right thing to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and knowing what we know today, I would do it again.
So okay, really? Okay, but by the way, Donald Rumsfeld has gone on the record and said you wouldn't assassinate Saddam Hussein. Instead, you would spend thousands and thousands of lives and billions of dollars. That seems like an absurd justification.
Look, the overthrow of Saddam Hussein was accomplished in an extraordinarily short period of time and with very few American casualties. There are two issues here. Was it right to overthrow Saddam Hussein? And then second, what happened after that? And you're conflating the two, and that's a huge mistake.
I don't see how I just don't see how you separate the overthrow from what happens afterwards, because, of course, there's a post-war.
Well, that's perfectly obvious how you separate it, because there were alternative courses that you could have taken. For example, instead of setting up a coalition provisional authority, we could have simply turned the government of Iraq back over to Iraqis from the diaspora for the opposition within Iraq and kept our military there essentially to hold the ring, but put political responsibility back in the hands of Iraqis. That's what I thought we were going to do.
In that case, the only objection would have been taking out Saddam Hussein. That's the only objective in a scenario like that.
No, no, no. The objective was to remove a threat to international peace and security that had used chemical weapons against its own people, had used chemical weapons against Iran during the 1980s, and that had kept together, even after U.N. inspections, 1,000 nuclear scientists and technicians, whom Saddam referred to as his nuclear mujahideen, who had the intellectual capital to rebuild a nuclear weapons program. And if you think Iran with nuclear weapons is bad, think about what it would have been like to have two nuclear powers like that in the Middle East.
Sweet. Then by that logic, we should be invading Iran and North Korea.
Do you think the U.S. or U.N. forces should have moved into Baghdad?
No.
Why not?
Because if we'd gone to Baghdad, we would have been all alone. There wouldn't have been anybody else with us. It would have been a U.S. occupation of Iraq. None of the Arab forces that were willing to fight with us in Kuwait were willing to invade Iraq. Once you got to Iraq and took it over and took down Saddam Hussein's government, then what are you going to put in its place? That's a very volatile part of the world, and if you take down the central government in Iraq, you can easily end up seeing pieces of Iraq fly off. Part of it the Syrians would like to have to the west. Part of eastern Iraq the Iranians would like to claim, fought over for 8 years. In the north, you've got the Kurds, and if the Kurds spin loose and join with the Kurds in Turkey, then you threaten the territorial integrity of Turkey. It's a quagmire.
Change in Iraq will bring about a number of benefits to the region.
We will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
I think they're in the last throes, if you will, of the insurgency.
Now, Rand Paul, pointing to things like that, wrote in the Wall Street Journal also, many of those clamoring for military action now are the same people who made every false assumption imaginable about the cost, challenge, and purpose of the Iraq war. They have been wrong for so long. Why should we listen to them again? Your response?
With all due respect, John, I was a strong supporter then of going into Iraq. I'm a strong supporter now. Everybody knows what my position is. There's nothing to be argued about there. But if we spend our time debating what happened 11 or 12 years ago, we're going to miss the threat that is growing and that we do face. Rand Paul, with all due respect, is basically an isolationist. He doesn't believe we ought to be involved in that part of the world.
Someone is responsible, and it's important for those of us who love liberty and resent big brother government, identify the philosophic supporters who have the most to say about the direction our country is going. These are the neoconservatives of recent fame. Granted, they are talented and achieved a political victory that all policymakers must admire. But can freedom and the republic survive this takeover? That question should concern us. Neoconservatives are obviously in positions of influence and are well-placed throughout our government and the media. The neoconservatives, a name they gave themselves, diligently worked their way into positions of power and influence. Above all else, they were not and are not conservatives dedicated to limited constitutional government. More recently, the modern-day neocons have come from the far left, a group historically identified as former Trotskyites. Liberal Christopher Hitchens has just recently joined the neocons, and it has been reported that he has already been to the White House as an ad hoc consultant. Many neocons now in position of influence in Washington can trace their status back to Professor Leo Strauss.